Good evening, and welcome to the not quite the 500th show. That's next week, which would make this show the
500 minus oneth show?
The 400 and lots.
Thursday show?
It's my third show. That's easier to remember.
No. Last week doesn't count. You phoned that one in from the infirmary. And by the way, how are you feeling?
Violated but fungally harmonised.
Oh, bother. My script just rebooted.
Never mind. Yours is at the end. Anyway, you can borrow mine. But I suppose on that note, we ought to get on with the headlines. Seriously? Dinosaurs? Again?
Commander Vantian goes full Postman Pat.
Pilots Federation community team missing.
Archaeologists bring us the latest in outdated spaceship design.
And the fashions that would have helped pass the time on them.
My script is still rebooting.
And it's BGS time. If anyone's got the time, that is.
First, this evening, we bring worrying news from the Pilots Federation that they've taken over the once experimental Jurassic World, previously the domain of the dastardly Don Antonacci, and they appear to not be learning any lessons from the first or second instances of said planet. A lush, green, oxygen-rich world, blessed originally with megaflora. That's really big plants for those of you that need such things explaining. It was originally mostly devoid of anything but insects, small lizards, and more insects. But taking a leaf out of the Dastardly Don's book, they came to an important decision.
We know what. Why don't we turn it into a leisure planet?
Which, on the face of it, seems fine. They have a reputation for some excellent theme park designs. But then some bright spark said...
And how about we super evolve the cute little lizards so they're much bigger, as they're hard to find when they're small and it involves a lot of walking, and no one wants to do that in those humid temperatures, so if we make them really big, then everyone can see them.
Which is less fine, especially after the first two planets had to be quarantined after the previously teeny tiny little lizards got big and ate everyone. They've reassured us that, given that they very capably run an entire bubble full of stations, pilots, materials and missions, one little planet with a few harmless lizards on it is absolutely no problem at all. Chief Safety Officer Rickety Fence had this to say.
We've been reading up on our Michael Crichton, and we've taken all appropriate steps to prevent incidents. We've got earthquake warning systems to tell us exactly when the really frequent earthquakes are going to hit. We've not hired that code-bodging fellow who programmed the original Limpets. And, of course, we've got new super-hardened cardboard-reinforced enclosures. You see, the lizards see any barrier as impenetrable. Could be a piece of string, and the lizards just won't go through it. Or is that horses? Never can tell them apart.
Anyway, we understand that Jurassic World the Third is undergoing testing at the moment, and tickets will be on sale later this year. Oh, and if anyone is thinking of using their panther clipper to steal some of the not-so-little lizards, then we recommend not, as they're not rated for aggressive livestock.
In a bold rejection of the galaxy's more conventional postal systems, Commander Vantian has taken it upon himself to hand-deliver security passes for this year's ECM gathering in Coventry, Sol 3. Citing a lack of faith in mission boards, courier firms, and the Imperial Mail, first class sometimes, The commander has opted instead for the slow, chaotic, and occasionally meaningful route of hopping about the bubble in an Apex taxi. His approach has involved arriving at random concourses, wafting through arrival lounges like a confused uncle at a graduation, and loudly inquiring, "Is your name Smith?" to anyone who would make eye contact. Most weren't, several refused to say, and one simply ran. Early indications suggest that some commanders are more difficult to deliver to than others. One notable individual booked their ECM pass in January and only this week remembered that they've been living in Colonia for the last 6 months. After a brief panic and a search for return transit options, they discovered that Colonia taxis don't just pop around on a whim. The pass has now been attached to a drone with enough fuel to reach the system, a long-life power core, and a sternly worded note. Other delivery setbacks have included two commanders who couldn't spell their own names correctly when registering. One pass is now addressed to Commander Bixlitter, which will be a surprise to everyone. One pilot who forgot where they live gave somewhere near Lave as an address, then admitted that they'd never been there. One enterprising attendee who forgot to book a ticket entirely, attempting to hijack the Apex taxi Vantaeum was riding in, and was last seen being politely but firmly ejected into a luggage bay. To accommodate the growing list of off-grid recipients, Vantaeum has commissioned a fleet of UHT long-life drones, the ultra-habitual transit variety, engineered for range, survivability, and the ability to loiter patiently in orbit until someone finally checks their messages. Each drone is equipped with deep space insulation, a low-wattage disco light for celebratory delivery moments, and heavily laminated ECM pass in a resealable snack bag. One even includes a short audio file of Vantaeum saying, "There you go then," before coughing awkwardly and signing off. Leo Wolf, on being briefed, quietly allocated emergency funding from the Courier Catastrophes contingency budget and has not been seen since. Security at the event itself is said to be on high alert for mislabeled lanyards, badge fraud, and panicked arrivals covered in glitter. Meanwhile, the event organisers remain philosophical.
"Well, a TCM,"
one said.
"We plan everything. Nothing goes to plan, and we love it anyway."
Further updates expected once the drones return. If they return.
Concerns have been raised this week over the conspicuous absence of the Pilots Federation community team, last seen broadcasting cheerfully from their studio at Chinrata Desert just before month end. Since then, they've not responded to pings, failed to file their usual paperwork, and, perhaps most disturbingly, have left their biscuit tin untouched. Their habitat suite remains unoccupied, save for an unopened pack of digestives, a half-finished cup of synth tea, and a post-it note simply reading, "Back in 5. That was 7 days ago. Security footage last recorded the trio, Kat, Zack, and the ethereal entity known as Paul's Typing Noise, leaving the broadcast studio with purpose. Unfortunately, the camera feed was then immediately obscured by what experts have described as either an errant disco ball or a particularly determined reflective pigeon. The ECM Planning Committee, growing increasingly nervous at the idea of running an event without the presence of the galaxy's most politely enthusiastic, officially licensed and Pilots Federation live streamers, has issued a galaxy-wide appeal for sightings. Commanders are advised to be on the lookout for
Cat, known for stylish jumpers and a voice calm enough to tame Thargoids.
Zack, hasn't blinked since 3309, often surrounded by at least two mugs and a complicated spreadsheet.
Paul, rarely seen, but his presence can be identified by neatly aligned fonts and mysterious social media posts.
All sightings so far include a cardboard cutout of Aisling Duval wearing a beanie, a janitor at their gateway with a slightly Zack-like beard. And someone in Colonia shouting, "Engagement metrics!" at a passing Viper. A working theory posits that the trio may have entered the test servers and been unable to find their way out. One ECM volunteer was last seen searching for them using a thermal scanner, two ferrets and an old copy of Microsoft Teams. Hutton Command requests that anyone encountering individuals even vaguely resembling Cat, Zack or a twitchy keyboard should immediately inform the station, secure the individuals using soft netting or biscuits, and await recovery teams. Any rumours that the team have been spending a lot of time on the dinosaur planet and might have been eaten are, as of yet, unconfirmed, but scientists are hunting piles of excrement for any signs of presenter digestion. In the meantime, the ECM schedule continues to be finalised with the assumption that someone, somewhere, will eventually find them and explain what exactly happened.
An archaeological dig through the unclaimed personal effects of noted space recluse Hugh Pratt has been revealed in recent days. A hard copy printout of a 21st century space colonisation plan. Discovered wedged into a crevice, the document outlines a now outdated proposal for generation ships, long-haul vessels designed to carry hundreds of humans over centuries to the outer worlds, back in the days before someone invented the Go FTL button. The winning concept, referred to as Chrysalis, imagined a 58-kilometer-long cigar-shaped spacecraft, presumably to allow approximately half of the inhabitants to feel constantly inadequate. Inside, concentric living cylinders would house parks, libraries, art galleries, and, most egregiously, a vegetarian population. Meat, apparently, was forbidden due to biodiversity concerns and the assumption that cows wouldn't enjoy zero-gravity milking. The social structure leaned heavily on polyamorous relationships, suggesting that occupants would maintain overlapping emotional partnerships to stave off boredom, jealousy, and the ever-present risk of becoming emotionally attached to a hydroponic lettuce. Critically, inhabitants would not reproduce exclusively with their life partners, but with members of the starship community. More broadly, possibly based on shared interests, availability, or who had the least soggy jumpsuit that week. To test psychological resilience, crew selection was based on Antarctic isolation training, presumably to ensure that nobody shouted,
"Are we there yet? Are we nearly there yet?"
before the first decade had passed. Meanwhile, the runner-up vessel Hyperion featured twin rotating rings and enormous magnetic shielding to protect pregnant crew from being irradiated into glowing and floating around the room. Noteworthy features included bespoke space fashions with enormous sealable pockets, ideal for hoarding snacks, ferrets, or forgotten to-do lists. It was also planned to carry three pairs of turtles, chosen for their resilience to disease, stoic outlook on long journeys, and ability to nap for 45 years without complaint. Following a successful trial launch of the generation ship, these turtles, it should be noted, would later gain infamy in the year 3305, after it was discovered their exclusively vegetarian diet led to chronic flatulence that killed over half the travellers on board. Third place went to Systema Stellare Proximarum, a ship that looked like a jellyfish and, according to later records, was promptly eaten by a wandering macro cephalopodian space whale, mistaking it for lunch. Religious belief on board was apparently to be guided by a hybrid non-human AI and a human council, with worship directed towards nature and man in all his forms. A phrase scholars believed originated from an awkward misprint in the ship's on-flight magazine. The Hutton Historical Society is currently analysing the full printout, now laminated for safety, and being kept under lock and key in Cubicle 3, as light reading material, whilst waiting to be rescued. According to the Chief Archivist and former dancing champion Gusto the Clown, the discovery represents a vital insight into the mind of pre-FTL civilization that hadn't yet worked out you could just not go to Tar Ceti if it was going to take you 250 years.
In this week's Sartorial Digest, we explore the lost fashions of the 21st century interstellar generation ship, recently rediscovered among the personal effects of one Hugh Pratt, myself, during a routine customs sweep following what I maintain was an innocent misunderstanding involving antique cravats and a molecular destabilizer. And not just any clothing. This was pragmatic, communal, romantically agile clothing. The uniform of choice aboard the Chrysalis, the 58-kilometer-long flying cigar filled with vegetarians and shifting domestic alliances, was the modular quick-release jumpsuit. Cut in a single piece from breathable antimicrobial fabric, the garment was designed with magnetized seams, tactile tabs, and haptic fasteners that could be disengaged with minimal effort, or, in some cases, just a meaningful glance. One design even featured programmable zippers that opened in response to biometric proximity, allowing partners to sync garments without ever having to ask, "Is now a good time?" Clearly, these were clothes not just for work, but for interpersonal collaboration, often spontaneous. The ship's social model was polyamorous by design, which presented a unique challenge for traditional tailoring. Formal wear needed to support sudden group intimacy, comfortable post-coital snack storage, and the ability to identify whose sleeve was whose in a five-person cuddle pile. The resulting style became known as flexwear, multi-user leisure garments, capable of accommodating up to four limbs and two egos at once. Undergarments were reversible, and in some alarming prototypes, mergeable. One archived photograph, though poorly lit and slightly sticky, depicts a domestic gathering where everyone appears to be connected at the hip. Literally. To prevent interpersonal confusion, accessories doubled as subtle indicators of availability. Neck tags in color-coded silicon denoted emotional readiness. A green cord implied open to discussion. Orange signaled snack first, then maybe. And red simply read processing a breakup with the biome engineer, so bugger off. Most garments included quick snap clasps and at least one pocket for personal lubricant or conflict resolution dice. It is unclear whether these codes worked in practice. A footnote in the original file reads, "Do not assume anything without eye contact and consent form 6B." One cannot help but admire the ambition. These were garments for a society in constant motion, emotionally, physically, and occasionally horizontally. Designed not for modesty, but honesty, efficiency, and easy laundering. Naturally, some of these design principles live on. The Hutton Orbital Maintenance crew still wear quick-release boiler suits, though in their case it's more about emergency toilet access rather than sudden romantic entanglement. Clothing, even in deep space, reflects the values of its society. For Chrysalis, it was adaptability, connection, the ability to share a meal, a moment, or a mattress without snagging a zip. It may not be to everyone's taste, but in fashion, as in polyamory, one must always dress for the occasion.
In news that will surprise absolutely no one and delight precisely no one, the latest operating system update, Porthole 11, has been forcibly installed across most of the galaxy's personal computing systems, datapads, station terminals, and in at least one case, the Auto Toilet Interfacing Cubicle 4. Originally heralded as a streamlined and efficient evolution of its predecessor, Porthole 11 has instead achieved a remarkable feat. It appears slower, bloated, more prone to spontaneous reboots than the already unpopular Porthole 10.9.4 Service Pack Infinite. Despite no one requesting it, authorizing it, or indeed consenting to it, Porthole 11 has now updated itself 3 minutes before every scheduled broadcast of Hutton Orbital Radio since its release. Attempts to delay the update are met with a calm but passive-aggressive message.
"Now is a great time to restart.
Among the key features of Porthole 11, a new animated loading wheel, now 12% more condescending. The start menu has been moved again and now requires voice authorization in a language you've never heard of. An integrated assistant, Sprocket, who offers unwanted advice in the middle of mission briefings, such as,
"Have you tried breathing deeply?"
And,
"You seem stressed."
And a new memory management protocol that somehow consumes more memory while managing it less effectively. As the system performance gradually degrades, usually beginning 1 week post-installation, users will be delighted to hear that Porthole 12 is already in development and will promise to fix everything by starting fresh. The only confirmed feature so far, a redesigned start button. Again. Commander Valkarius attempted to uninstall the software this week using industrial solvent, a mining laser, and a ritual chant from the Colonia Reformatory for Wayward Coders. Results were inconclusive. More on this story once the system reboots. In the meantime, I'll stick to Linux.
Welcome to the Hutton BGS bit, where we ask the BGS to smell the cheese. So, what's happening this week in Hutton space? Well, we are still at war in HP89621 against Osunti Two Eyes and Co. Or maybe at war with them again. It's hard to know. LHS 1050 sees us in war at war with the LHS 1050 Holdings. No idea what they're holding, but I'm sure we can wrestle it away from them. There are outbreaks in LTT 7072 and Jastreb sector IH-M-A7-1. We are slowly losing an election in Swimes DP-D C1-9 against the Genekpe Coalition. And we are rapidly losing an election to the Revolutionary Party of Askarage in Askarage. And investment continues in Barnard Star until Christmas, probably. Booms this week are in Cosys, Sector DL-Y, D133, Riga, Wolf359, 36 Ophiuchi, Den 0255-4700, Kokari, LHS149, LHS1827, Talta, Wise 1405 plus 5534, Swimes EP-D C1-18 and Sinuef SP-E C28-12. Oh, also Tashita Sector EM-M A7-1, a Wolf 1481 and Wolf 562. PSPF LF2 is having a boom and an infrastructure failure. And WISE 0855-0714 is having a bit of a blight. But what does it all mean? Well, if you want to truck it, then truck it to Barnard Star for maximum profit, or one of those boom systems for slightly less profit. Or truck medical supplies to LTT 7072 or Jastreb Sector IH-M A7-1. Or truck food and machinery to PSPF LF2, or truck agronomic treatments to WISE B, oh, WISE 0855-0714. If you want to mission run, then do so in Swimes DP-D C1-9 or Askarage to help with those elections. And if you want to shoot it, then shoot Osunti Two Eyes in HIP 98621 or the Askarage Revolutionary Party in Askarage. And that's it for this week's Hutton BGS bit.